We are, of course, at Shabbat Korach. It's that moment in time when every preacher, every rabbi gets to this portion. You're going through the calendar and you go, oh, it's Korach again. And as we know, always so often, how real life reflects the various portions. Korach is the one that sends a shudder down everyone's spine. Korach is the portion, the very peak, as it were, in the book of Numbers, of rebellion against God. We rebel. How we rebel against our God. The portion this morning, therefore, was Numbers, Bamidbar 16, 1 through 19. The Haftarah portion there was from the first book of Shmuel, 1 Samuel 12, 1 through to 15. And from the Messianic writings, we had a section there which on the face of it may not connect directly, we think, with Korach, but I think we'll see as we go through this morning the connections will be made, it'll join together. That was from the Besorah according to Matthew, and that was chapters 6 through 1 through to 6. I actually want to take another slice of Yeshua's life as our starting point, rather than the Torah portion this morning. We're going to come on to Korach. You'll see how it all fits together. So don't just scream at me straight away. But I want to read a little bit for you from the Besorah according to the record that we have from Yochanan. And that comes from chapter 13. Yeshua, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, rose from supper and laid aside his garments and took a towel, girded himself, tied the apron, as it were, the towel, around himself. And after that he poured water into a basin and began to wash his followers' feet, to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. And he came to Shimon Kepha. And Kepha said to him, Lord, are you washing my feet? And Yeshua answered and said to him, what I'm doing you do not understand now, but you will know after this. And Kepha said to him, you will never wash my feet. And Yeshua answered and said, if I do not wash you, you have no part with me. Shimon Kepha said to him, Lord, then not only my feet, but my hands and my head also. And Yeshua said to him, he who has had a ritual immersion, the mikvah, needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean, and you are clean. When he washed their feet, taken his garments and sat down again, he said to them, do you know what I have just done to you? You call me teacher, rabbi, and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and your teacher, your rabbi, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. And immediately you're all sitting there thinking to yourself, oh no, the rabbi's giving out bowls of water after the service. Trust me, you don't want to be washing my feet. And I doubt you probably want to be washing the feet of each other either. It's not about feet. It's not the actual foot washing I want to focus on at all. Actually, in many ways, that has almost received a kind of iconic status in commentaries ever since, for the last 2,000 years, and we'll still see even people today get into this act of foot washing as if to say, but this was the example that Yeshua gave us, and so we are literally meant to wash each other's feet. I think actually it's missing the point. If you were washing the feet of someone in the first century, it had a critical role and function in the first century, which we don't have today. You know the kind of sandals that they wore in the first century. Socks, they hadn't been invented yet. And if they had, they certainly weren't worn in the heat of Israel. People went effectively barefoot or with very simple sandal-type shoes on their feet. And if you know anything about Israel and the dust that is kicked up in the summer in particular, as you walked through the Negev and around, and if you imagine 2,000 years ago, you know, where there were not that many paved roads and tarmac roads as you'd have today, those kind of roads that you walk up and down with the donkeys and the horses and everything else that's using them, your feet by the end of the day were completely caked in mud and grime and dust and the muck of it all. So what happens at the end of the day? You get into your house, and if you are rich enough, if you are well known, famous enough possibly, but certainly wealthy enough, as you would then come into your home, you would sit down, and at that point, a slave would enter the room. A servant in your house. And all you would do is to sit there and kick off your sandals and crack open that first cool beer. And your slave would get to work. Pouring water over your feet and scrubbing them and freeing them up, cooling them from the heat of the day. A filthy, dirty job. A job that only the master would expect only their slave, their servants to do. That was the servant's job. An unrewarded, dirty job. It's not the kind of thing you put on a CV. Probably not the thing, although I'm sure that there were some generous masters as well, probably not the thing the master would even say thank you for to the servant. It's their job. It's what I pay you for. Do it. Cooled, dried, clean feet, you would put new shoes on at that point, which your servants had cleaned as well, that you could enter the evening at least feeling clean from the day. Aspects of this which are fascinating in all of this, I begin to understand the interaction, which is the real focus of what's going on here, of Kepha's reaction when Yeshua gets to him to wash his feet, and his indignation and his shock and his horror. He says, Rabbi, Lord, not you. You are not doing this to me. That's a servant's job. It's a slave job. It is below you. It's below your status, below your position. It's below where you are in this world with the recognition and the respect and the honor which everyone gives to you as the most respected and powerful Torah teacher of his generation, which Yeshua was. And Kepha understands this, knows this, his followers understand this. And here suddenly is this most honored and respected man of God literally taking the place of a slave and a servant and washing his followers' feet. His followers, these are the people who are following him. They should be washing his feet in honor and respect. And Yeshua completely turns this on its head culturally and blows this out the water and says, I will serve you. I will take that role of a slave and a servant, and I will serve. The reaction, of course, Kepha is so interesting in all of this, having refused Yeshua to do that for him, refusing to allow Yeshua to lower himself to such a humbling place and role. Kepha's reaction is then to go completely overboard, which I think is fairly typical of this man Kepha. He's a wonderful man, but he was pretty slow at learning things sometimes. He goes completely overboard. He says, not just my feet, then my head and my body and my hands, and do the whole lot. Take me to the mikveh and put me through the mikveh and let's do this. If you're going to do this, and Yeshua's going, no, you still don't get this, do you? It's not about ritual. It's not about anything about the foot washing in itself. He says, you do not get this, do you? I am taking upon myself, he says, a role to serve and be a servant to you, the humility of it all. Kepha fails to understand that this service in humility actually brings true honor and respect. He missed the point of all of this. He thought that just by being this wonderful teacher, by being this wonderful man of God, by walking around with wise words and teachings, able to heal people, he thought that by doing all of this, automatically honor and respect was given to a man like this. And Yeshua says, no, that is not the way it works. See, people could copy those things. Real honor and respect comes through serving in humility, self-sacrifice. It doesn't come about from being top dog with all the external trappings. Real honor comes not through recognition, not through titles, not through esteemed positions. And you see the reality of this, and we are, of course, talking about Korach in the background of all of this. We understand the truth of this in the way that Yeshua deeply understood the truth of this. Yeshua did not, despite all of his power and authority, and this is the man who said, and I quote again, "You call me Lord, and you say, well, for so I am." I'm not saying that. Yeshua said that. It's making it very clear to the people who were listening and could hear that word at that point. He says, you are calling me Lord Adonai. He says, and I am Adonai. With all of that power and position and authority that Yeshua had at that moment, he literally could have walked into the courts of the Sanhedrin or any other courts of judgment or leadership or whatever in Israel. He could have walked straight in and said, I am the king of Israel. Make way. Get out of my way. I expect that respect. He could have said, I have that authority. Give it to me. And he could have demanded it. And Yeshua did none of these things. Because that's man's way. That's the way of humanity. And it brings us back to this portion of Korach in a powerful way, because what Korach needed, what he wanted, was the top dog, the external trappings. He wanted the recognition, he wanted the titles, he wanted the esteemed position. And let's be honest, he already had so much that God had given to him. And it was still not enough. He wanted more. He wanted, craved, the things of status and position and recognition. And he completely, utterly misses the point that any position which God gives you is about serving God and people alone. Even if there is no reward, no recognition, no status, and no one ever sees you do it. You know who is the most humble person that has a high position in the kingdom of God? It's the person who went into the toilet and cleaned it last week, and I didn't even know who did it, and I still don't know a name. Because only one person, only one, saw who did that. And that was God. They're not knocking the door down for a role. Not kicking the door in for a status. They didn't leave a little note on the bima here for them, the lectern, to say, please acknowledge before the congregation that I cleaned the toilet last week. If I had said that, I would have said what Yeshua also said in the reading this morning from Matthew chapter 6. Verily, verily, you have your reward already. Your honour before men. You've got your reward. But your eternal reward? Maybe not so. You know, we're strangers, human beings. I'm going to read a little section to you here from the Besora of Lucas. And it's quite interesting, again, how we are as people when we walk before people, we live our lives before people. Again, Yeshua's comments here really are quite biting. He wasn't the only person to make these comments in the first century. He says, then in the hearing of all the people, he said to his followers, beware of the scribes who desire to walk in long robes and love greetings in the marketplaces, the best seats in the synagogues and the best places at the feasts, who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. Just beware of people like this. Now, I want to be honest. Verses like that have been used for criticism of Messianic Judaism down the ages. Yeshua is not labeling every scribe as a hypocrite. There are many people who were not scribes who would fall into that category as well, I'm sure. What it does show us, that in the first century, and honestly not just the first century, right up to now, right up to today as well, that each and every one of us can fall into this exact same trap, that we love to be seen doing the mitzvot, to be seen by others, to be seen as acting righteous before others, as if somehow it accrues to our status, our position, our acknowledgement before other people, a pat on the back, you have done well, well done, you're an amazing person. It wasn't just in the first century, people do it today. And you know what's the worst thing about all of this? Is that especially, shall we say, religious people do it. Because we've got so much more that we can pretend over. And Yeshua said, you have no reward if you do this. You have your earthly recognition, but none before God. You know what Yeshua's role was? What Yeshua's pattern was for us? Let me read it to you again. Same pattern that he showed as he tied that towel around his middle and washed his followers' feet. This is the pattern which Yeshua gives. This comes, of course, from the letter that Shaul wrote to the Jewish community in Philippi. It comes from chapter 2, picking up from verse 3. Yeah, 3. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind. Let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests. I love that, by the way. Because people will often say to you, oh no, it's nothing about you. No, 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 just pour it all out for other people. Do you notice what it says there? Quite interesting. He says, let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. It's not a sin to look out for your own interests. Isn't that interesting? People have these kind of slightly warped ideas sometimes. You know, you're not meant to look out for yourself as well. You're not meant to want to be harmed. But don't get so absorbed by that that you stop looking out for the interests of other people. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Messiah Yeshua, who being in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a servant, a slave, coming in the likeness of men, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even that death on the execution stake. If you want humiliation and humility, that's it. Therefore, God also has highly exalted him and given him the name which is above every name, that at the name of Yeshua every knee should bow, in heaven and those on earth, and of those under the earth, that every tongue confess that Yeshua, Mashiachinu, is Adonai, to the glory of God the Father. It's one of these passages which have often been ripped apart and misunderstood and everything else that goes with it. But we, in a nutshell, we're trying to examine what is being said here from Shaul this morning. Yeshua is God's salvation. He took human form. He was born into humanity. Did not need to be born into humanity. Wasn't necessary on that level. But God did this because he wanted to prove us and show us something which is powerful, powerful spiritual dynamic in the kingdom. And it's the way the Torah works, the spiritual principle of Torah and righteousness before God. He deliberately did this, taking upon himself the form of a human, as it were. But even while doing that, could have claimed kingship and honor and respect, but no. He made himself of no reputation, taking the form of a slave and servant, coming in the likeness of men. And his appearance of a man, he humbled himself, becoming obedient. This is so powerful. God himself humbled himself. God humbled himself. God himself effectively was saying, I do not want your reputation, I'm not interested in your status and all of this recognition or accreditation or anything else which goes with it. God himself effectively emptied himself as if to say, these things are of no importance to me. I will humble myself even before the creatures that I have made and created. I will humble myself. This is our God. The pattern which has been set before us is quite astonishing. The depth of it, mind-blowing. What God is saying through all of this, through the birth of Yeshua and his role in the human realm in this, that he was able to humble himself and take that role as a servant, as a slave, effectively, was to utterly deny the typical way of mankind, quasi we see with Korach in this portion. People want status. People want to forever rule, don't they? Forever people want to rule. They want to control people. They want to dominate people. They want to be the center of attention. If they can't dominate this, they'll dominate that. They'll try and dominate this. They're forever trying to dominate and control, and even the people who say that they want to be the king of the world. You see it in people, humanity, all the time. They prefer to let others serve them rather than serve. This is not God's way. This is not Yeshua's way. Yeshua's human pattern for the kingdom of God, the Jewish way, as it has always been, was to step lower, to serve, to give of self and truly love by self-emptying service. Do you know who else lived this pattern before our eyes? One person in particular, Moshe, who was what? What do we know about him? The scriptures are very clear. He was the greatest man that ever lived? That's not what it says, is it? What does the Torah say about Moshe? The humblest man that ever lived. You see, even in Moshe we see the same pattern. It's why, in many ways, Moshe was able, at the point of Korach, he didn't try and fight Korach. He didn't try and demand the recognition. This is Moshe. He could have stood there and said, are you actually kidding me? I am Moshe. It doesn't say it. Moshe's reaction again and again and again, as we go through the scriptures and through Bamidbar and elsewhere, the one thing you will always see Moshe do when he is attacked by the people within Israel, his fellow Jewish people, his friends and his community around him, when he's attacked in his way, the one thing that Moshe always does, he does not hit back, he does not attack back, he goes on his knees and he prays. He humbles himself before God. Because that's the only thing you can do. Moshe survives that encounter with Korach, not because he's the greatest man on the planet at that time, but because he's the humblest man, and Korach isn't. He's arrogant. He's lashing out at Moshe because he wants what Moshe's got. And he's certainly not going to get it. because there's one thing Korach does not have, is humility. Korach doesn't want to serve Israel. He doesn't want to serve the people of Israel. He wants them to serve him. He's already got so much, but it's not enough. The same pattern comes out in Yeshua's life again and again. Yeshua, of all people at that time, with the power and authority he had from heaven, could have demanded worship, could have demanded to be installed as the king of Israel, could have demanded that every single Jewish person in Israel came and bent the knee before him. And with the power and authority he had as God, he could have forced his people to do this. And he didn't. Instead, he chose the path of humility, to empty himself, to utterly give of himself with no reward, with no sense of anything to be returned to him. Gratification? No. In fact, we know from the scriptures, what does it say? And his own rejected him. You see, in the kingdom of heaven, there are no such thing as spiritual brownie points. There's no such thing as spiritual scout badges to be earned and worn with pride. Actually, that was a crazy thing. You know, we could be like, wear this with pride. That kind of undermines the very act, doesn't it, really, right? You don't wear anything with pride. If anything that's pride or proud, immediately is telling you there's a problem. There's no logic even to a spiritual merit system. And again, we often hear this in Judaism. By whose merits are we supposed to be standing today? The merits of Moshe? Well, hello, Moshe wasn't even allowed to enter the land. Moshe was a sinner just like you and me. How about our fathers? The merits of our patriarchs? No. They were sinners too. Abraham, maybe Abraham, surely Abraham's merits. We can all stand here today on the basis of the merits of Abraham, really. The one who decided to help God out through the birth of Ishmael and the problems that have gone down the ages ever since. By whose merits are we standing? Maybe the merits of Yeshua, but certainly not our own. Because every single human being has fallen short of the glory of God. It's time we lived with that full acceptance of all of this. None of us walk around with our arms full of spiritual brownie points and scout badges of what we've earned before God. That's the path of human thinking. True spiritual people, I think Yeshua would say, are more than happy to turn up, as it were, at the pearly gates with sleeves empty of badges, because they don't feel they've merited anything, have earned nothing, and yet they will say, Lord, all I did was to serve you. And yet to serve God is everything. Any position that God gives you is alone in God's grace and hand to give you in his mercy and kindness, and it is only to serve. Nobody, as Korach illustrates for us, nobody should step up into any role or place or calling of Adonai with a view to thinking, I've arrived. I knew it happened. It was only a matter of time before it would be recognized. I suspect any attitude like that won't last long. Yeshua didn't approach his ministry in that way. Moshe didn't approach his ministry in that way. And at the end of it all, when we reach that final moment, and if God says to us, welcome, good and faithful servant, then we will know that he's rewarded what we have done in the life to come, in the Olam Haba. We will know at that moment that it was not all in vain, but as of now we serve in humility, not expecting recognition, reward, or anything at all. The problem that we've got in our world today is that we are surrounded by role models in leadership and elsewhere who are telling us, screaming at us, that the very opposite is true. We are filled today, it seems, in our world with narcissistic leaders. These narcissistic leaders, world leaders, global leaders, government leaders, leaders of communities, it doesn't matter, at every level we see them. These leaders have become the real fruit of a world that has become self-seeking and selfish. The fruit of the me now generation of total self-absorption. It's all about them. These people, we, even in our own times, ourselves, we can fall into this trap. We crave the clickbait of instant gratification. We put something up on our Facebook page, which tells people what you were doing on the mitzvah day in our area, and if you haven't had 200 likes by midnight, you are downcast. Then what did you do it for? Switch off the like button on your Facebook page and see how interesting it becomes. Will you go every 10 minutes to check? If you know that no one's going to tell you they like you? This is the problem of our generation, of the age that we're living in. The times of instant gratification, approval, affirmation and acceptance. At the beginning it was fun. We liked the idea that 10 people liked what we did or liked what we said. After a few years of doing it, it's no longer a matter we think it's fun. We need it. We crave it. It's become part of our identity and personality. We yearn for recognition to stand out from the crowd, a desire to be esteemed and regarded highly. When you've got people who are so-called influencers on TikTok, on Instagram, whatever, with a following of thousands, their very identity is now so connected with adoration and affirmation and being liked that if you took it away, they would crumble into themselves in a heap of dust. Where have we got to, humanity? Where have we arrived? These are all signs spiritually of a humanity that has lost its way. We've replaced God with man, abandoned worship for a fake image of self, worshipping what we do, worshipping what we say, allowing others to worship us, as if somehow what we're doing is that good. Will humanity ever get beyond its pride, arrogance, ego, self-centeredness, its greed for ever more power and influence and control? Or shall we just say, welcome to Parashat Korach? Because Korach was the same, wasn't he? Driven to want more power, recognition, influence. You know what? If Korach was living in today's world, he would love it. He would. He'd be right in there. He'd probably be running for parliament. He'd love it. But that's not Yeshua's way. It's not God's way. It's not the Jewish way. The kingdom way. That's not how it's done. Not in reality. Now don't get me completely wrong. I'm not saying that our basic human needs are wrong here. We all need appreciation, approval and affirmation. So here we go. I'm telling you this morning, all of you, including all of you listening, I appreciate you, I approve you and I affirm you. You're wonderful people. Oh, I got a heart back there. That's good. Thank you for affirming me. These are human basic needs. We're not knocking these things. We need to be told how much we're loved and respected and liked. We need these things. But spiritually, this can get in the way of true service to Adonai when that balance is lost. When we cross over that line that we're cleaning the toilets because we want and need someone in the leadership in the synagogue to come to you and say, thank you, that toilet is so clean I could eat out of it. Yeah, I thought you'd find that disgusting. But you get my point. If that's what you are doing it for, then if that's what you're doing it for, then next time I'm not going to give you a pat on the back. If all we do is to serve so we are seen, if we get down if we're not appreciated, then we're missing the point of it all. I don't think Yeshua was depressed because he was rejected by his own people, despite being the best Torah teacher in his generation. I don't think Yeshua was saying today, as you flick through the pages of the Talmud and tries to find the recognition there of his name and his teaching, and trying to find it in that way, and not finding it. It's not about that. Yeshua is the best Torah teacher of his generation, regardless of whether he was accepted as such or not. Regardless of whether he was affirmed in that or not. I would even go so far as to say that Yeshua is the Mashiach of Israel, regardless of whether anyone acknowledges it. In a similar situation, did we not just a little while ago, you know, when all the hoo-ha was there, when America acknowledges the capital of Jerusalem, the capital of Israel is Jerusalem, and everyone got so excited about this. And I just thought, you know what, if all you need is American affirmation for Jerusalem to be the capital of Israel, that is pretty sad. Jerusalem is the eternal city of God and capital of Israel forever, regardless of whether America says it is, or Britain, or the UN, or anyone. And I have no fear in saying that in the live stream. God does not need human affirmation or acceptance or acknowledgement of anything he does, because he does it and it is, and that is it. We just accept it or not. It's our choice, but it is real. Yeshua is Mashiach of Israel because he was sent by Adonai to be such. He fulfilled his role and his calling, and today he is Mashiach of Israel. He didn't do it to earn recognition, status, position, power. These things are transient. They're here today and gone tomorrow. Ask anyone in power. One day you can be top of the tree, and a year later you can be a nobody. It's true. These things are transient. And if you need these things, then that tells me and you more about what is actually going on in your life than anything else. You know, sometimes people say, Rabbi, you just want to be standing at the front because you get all the attention. You know what? It's a complete pack of lies. I don't do this for status and recognition. Honestly, do you seriously think I have status and recognition? Really? Do you think I've got that? Really? Just ask anyone on the internet. They'll tell you I don't. I have no reputation. In fact, if anything, my reputation is so trashed out there on the internet, frankly, it's a joke. I have no reputation. Do you think I stand here to gain a reputation? I have nothing to defend. And do you know what? I don't care. That's how I can stand here and smile in the face of all of this. I would care if I wanted status and recognition, if I wanted to have a reputation, I would deeply care. But I don't. Because actually, you know what, I don't care what people think about me. Let them think what they want to think. Let them say what they want to say. You know, Yeshua's attitude and all of this was like, yeah, it's fine, you can do what you want to do, but you know what, I know what I need to do and I'm going to do it. And I'm not doing it because you're going to pat me on the back. Yeshua knew he would not be received with high acclaim. But we know, don't we, at the very end of his life, that crown of thorns is pushed violently into his forehead and his head, causing blood to gush down his face, mocking his kingship. He was the true king of Israel. He is today the true king of Israel. That has never stopped. and the mocking he received, the whipping he received, the verbal vilification, attacks, the spitting. Yeshua didn't die for our sins because he wanted to be a hero in our eyes. He did this because he served humanity. He served us as Israel. His death was the ultimate act of a humble man of service to God. That's your model. That's your role which he gave us. Would you hoover the floors in the synagogue if no one ever saw you do it? Would you clean the toilets? Would you run the food bank or turn up as a volunteer if no one saw you? Would you go down to the supermarket to buy some milk for Shabbat if no one knew that you did it? Would you help? Would you offer to carry someone's bags up an incline on a street if no one saw you do it? What would you do if no one could see it? Would you still do it? Because it's serving God only? Now, we started with that reading this morning from Matthew 6. He says, now don't pray in out loud in the synagogues and in the corners. He's not saying about what we're doing here. That isn't what Yeshua is saying. You know what he's saying. He says, rather go into your room and lock the door where no man can see you pray, except your Father in heaven. When you do a mitzvah, don't brag about it. Don't tell people about it. Be satisfied in your own mind that you've done it unto the Lord and it has not been seen by man. Because your Father in heaven has seen it. Because of such, he chooses and lifts up and places in positions. Not because they've earned it. Not because of their merits. But because of their humility. Such people the Lord lifts up. Because they follow in the pattern of Moshe, follow in the pattern of Yeshua. We're not seeking the reputations of Korach. Forever wanting more to be seen, to be doing more, to have more. Yeshua set his face, the scriptures say, he set his face as flint to follow through and obey God, regardless of any recognition, appreciation, affirmation. He just got on with it. Knowing he wasn't going to receive these things. It was the model and example that he gave us. True, humble service. As it says here, he made himself of no reputation. He took the form of a servant. He humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death. The example that he gave to us all in our own walk, in our own lives. True, humble service knows that God sees what you do, but we do not need to blare it around. We leave the rest to him, regardless of what others think. But know this, that whatever you do to serve God in that quiet, single place, is seen by him. It's never lost. See, Israel, the kingdom of God, works in a different way. It does not work in the model of Korach. The leaders like Korach are not needed in Israel. We need leaders like Moshe, leaders like Yeshua. True, humble, servant leaders. We need prime ministers and presidents in Israel today who have that same spirit of nothing other than to serve our nation and our people, even if they never get respect, reputation, an acknowledgement for it. Where are these people in our day? Sadly, it seems there are very few. Now, I know that you are such people. I've seen you, because sometimes I see the things that you do and you don't even know I'm watching. I do see things in the synagogue. I know who does what. And it's a wonderful thing to see that humility. That is what we strive for. If we have in our synagogue community, in our world, if we are able to model that and pattern that for people, it's to go back to what I said at the beginning, to show that kindness. Even when it's not accepted, but to show it anyway. What a different world we would live in. What a different place it would be. That's the model that Yeshua gave us. He humbled himself even to the point of death. That's our God. That's incredible. What a God who demands to be worshipped. It's not a God who forces us to worship him. His path is to walk that path of humility. That we respond, we are convicted by his humility, we are convicted of our arrogance, of our pride, of our rebellion, and we humble ourselves before God and then choose to follow him. That is the path. That is completely different from what this world has on offer. Amen.